Welcome to the GTC podcast.
There we go. Usually there's a couple of seconds where the audio sort of catches up, but I think we are recording. So, to all the listeners out there, welcome to the GTC podcast. You've just had the generic intro, but there's my official live one. And we've got he looks pretty essence, but it might just be that my screen's a bit blurry right now. We've got DC from Civ2 Commando on, as it might sort of allude to in the title. Civ2 Commando is a mentoring and phys type program that DC heads up, which I believe with a couple of other guys, so I'm not going to steal his thunder too much, but he is a former Royal Marine. So before everyone gets too bored of my voice, I'm going to pass you over to DC. He can give himself a quick intro as to who he is and what Civ2 Commando is, and then we'll roll straight into me asking a bunch of questions. So welcome, DC. How you doing, mate?
How's it going, mate? You all good?
Yeah, good, mate, good.
Yeah, good, good. I'll warn you first that my nickname when I was in the Marines was Mumbles, because I've had a stutter my whole life, so if it sounds like it's glitching, that's probably what it is like, so.
No, it'll be the glitch. We're on Skype, mate, so we'll just blame the glitch.
Yeah, we can roll. Yeah, it's more or less squared away. Yeah, so from a young age, I had a stutter and all of that. It was much worse then. Couldn't even speak, couldn't get words out in the register at school or anything like that. And I've always been like a really talkative person, so now the words finally come out, it's hard to get me to stop, especially after a coffee. I've had about two today, so. Joined the Corps at 16, passed training as an original, back in 2010, and then up to 4-5 Commando, where I spent my whole career, pretty much. I love 4-5. 4-5 till I die. I left the Corps. I mean, we can go back to this, but I left the Corps, I moved over to Australia, lived the dream there for a bit, and I've moved home, bit of visa trouble, and set up Civ2 Commando, sort of helping the newer generation of recruits to sort of prepare best for going down to basic training. I remember when I was sort of 15, 16, and I was like that uber keen, you know, pre-nod, like every book, every TV show, everything. I was, you know, any Facebook group that I could find with a few chat bots and some info, I was just all over it. I absolutely loved it. And there was nowhere to go with this keenness. I had all of this that, like, I wanted to ask questions. I had 100 questions that I wanted to ask. I even started stalking bootlegs on Facebook that I didn't know, and adding them and being like, mate, I've got loads of questions, I'm dead keen, and they were just like, fuck off, you know, like, go away, you weirdo. So I was just really keen. I had loads of questions. I just wanted to know stuff. I wanted someone to, like, tell me the way to train and all of that, and I wanted to learn military knowledge prior to going. I just wanted to be, I wanted to get there. I had so much sort of spare time prior to going, and I wanted to use it on this, and there was no way of doing it, and that's how I sort of came up with the idea. And I think I've always been probably like seemed a confident person, but at the same time need a bit of reassurance sometimes, need to be told that you're doing something well or you're not doing something right. And when someone that you look up to sort of puts their arm around you and says, you know, mate, like, you are doing a good job, you have got what it takes, like, it fucking helps so much, and it can really mentally spur you on and put you in the right direction. I remember, like, my PTI back in training, I thought he fucking hated me. And then on the run back from the endurance course, he was sort of spurring me on and, like, spurring me on, come on, mate, you've got this. And I was like, fuck me, I thought you hated me. And I remember that 10 years ago, you know, like it was yesterday. I'm sure you know the same.
Yeah, mate, 100%. I think it's interesting dynamic how it's changed. Like, I think pre-nod, as you said, which is actually an incredible term. I've never heard that before. So pre-nod, I was very similar. I don't think I was as keen. I definitely wasn't as fit. I know that. I sort of struggled through most of it, but slipped through the net possibly. But yeah, it was hard, wasn't it? I think Commando on the front line was out. And I binged that like 5 or 6 times. And then those really chad fucking magazine type things you would get from the recruiting office, which was just like, told you about the specs, a little bit of core knowledge, you know, that sort of shit. I think I devoured those over and over again. But apart from that, that's it, isn't it? There isn't actually much more out there. Whereas now, I know of you, there's a few other companies that do similar things. And then there's, like, obviously right now coming out, there's Commando, the on a Sunday night, I think it is, on Channel 4. Royal Marine School came out, what, a few years ago now. All of mixed reviews, especially from serving and former bootnecks, but there's a lot more out there now, and there's companies that help you when you are pre-nod. But yeah, there's definitely there's a market there, isn't there? You know, there's a gap.
Definitely. I actually think I've got one of those weird memories when I don't know what I had for lunch yesterday, but I can watch a film once and I just know it, but I knew all of the words to Commando on the front line. Like, I can think back to it now.
A hot wit.
Yeah. Can't swim, corporal.
Yeah. Remember that Terry John? Did you ever hear the dip when you were in training that he, obviously because he failed training, didn't he?
Yeah.
He ducked out and then someone span a dip. I don't know if it's true. If it is, I'm so sorry, Terry John. If you're out there, mate, please come on the podcast and debunk this.
Yeah,
but I heard that he joined the Royal Artillery, tried to go 2-9, failed again, went out to Ganners and then caught it up, got blown up.
No.
Yeah. Mate, as I say, that could have just been the nod vine, like the grapevine through the core, but I heard that and I was like, no way. But yeah, we'll see.
If you're out there.
If you're out there, please reassure me, because I've been spinning that dip that you're brown as, mate. I'm sorry.
Mate, and I think, like, in terms of, like, training, like, there's ways you can help people train for the core, and there's probably quite a lot out there like that, but I wanted to go more down the mental route, the sort of mindset route, because everyone says that the core's all mental, it's all upstairs, you know, and everything like that, and everyone's doing fitness, but no one's doing mindset, and I remembered what I wanted the most was to speak to a Marine, and, like, being honest, the idea for me, like, I used to be scared of like, using the phone, because my stutter was that bad. Genuinely, I couldn't even do phone calls. I'd just text people and be like, don't ring me. So now I can talk. I'm like, I actually love it. I love speaking to people.
And now you're doing a podcast.
Exactly. That's the idea. As many of these, it helps with it, you know, like, and speaking to people, just like doing voice notes with them and like having chats with them and sort of getting to know them a bit more personally. And it really helps. And I can tell that they get lots of benefit from it, you know, just sort of speaking to someone and having someone they look up to who they want to be like, to speak to helps like so much. And it's really rewarding when these lads that are putting so much work and they're passing CPC. We've got 5 on this week on the CPC.
So
best of luck to the boys, but they've all trained real hard. And, it's great to see when they come back and they're beaming and they're like, thank you so much. And, cause you get quite personal with them too, you know. I was never a corporal in, when I was in the corps, but I imagine it's sort of like that with your troop, you know, you like seeing them do well and stuff like that. It's good.
Yeah. It's probably a fine little balance, isn't it? Awesome. So let's, before we get, carried away with, you know, we'll go into a little bit more detail about the business and what you provide in a minute, but let's quickly wind it back down and quickly go. So you joined at 16, straight out of school, went up to the Mighty 4-5. What sort of, we'll keep it brief because we've got loads of things we want to chat about. What were like the highlights of your career? And, obviously you mentioned Afghan and then that'll lead us into, some other stuff that we want to talk about, but what was the sort of highlights of the core and what were the sort of lowlights, if you like?
So
you're not allowed to say joining run.
What's joining run? So like, obviously when you first get to a commando unit, so I was the duty sprog, and me and one of my mates, who's still one of my best mates to this day, Callum Toogood, we rocked up to 4-5 on the same day, both sort of like, sort of just turned 17, and I was like a little small, proper stuttering lad, like really bad back then. And he was a 6'4" Asian-looking lad with an Essex accent. So
incredible.
Yeah, I marched up first in front of our troop, and you have to, you know, sergeant, I am 300, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, he's like, what the fuck was that? And the whole troop's looking, everyone's laughing, and I'm like, oh shit. I was like, come on, you got this. And I was like, right. And he went, right, fuck off, Mumbles. And then that was it. From that day, I was Mumbles. And then Callum marched over. I never call him that because I only call him by his nickname. But he marched over, didn't even say a word, and he went, right, fuck off, Noodles. So Mumbles and Noodles. So the sort of the sprog routine and all there, as everyone gets as a new lad, you know, it is pretty shit. But I do get the importance for it. But went straight to Canada, did a sort of decent trip there, and then went off to Afghan. I'd say Afghan was that, you know, that the proudest thing that you've done, I'd say. But the highlights of the corps, I'd probably say, we did a trip on ship doing the migrants, you know, helping the migrants that were stranded on ships. And these people have been stranded for 5 days, no food, they've been drinking seawater, and like the babies, you can see the ribs and everything, and, you know, so thankful. Like half of them were, and then half of them just wanted to fucking rob the ship of all the food and like blankets and that, but half of them are so thankful, and it's nice to do something nice, you know what I mean? And it gives you a much different perception about migrants coming over and things like that when you actually see how desperate these people are. That was good. I played a lot of rugby during the corps too, and, you know, went to Australia, which ignited the spark to move over there and go and live the dream. But I'd say possibly Afghan, yeah, doing that trip out there. Went out there with 4-5 Commando Yankee Company, 18 years old, and we sort of landed over there. We did like the acclimatization. Have you been over to Afghan?
No, I haven't, mate. No.
You know, like they do the like the Camp Bastion acclimatization and all of that, and you get used to the heat and the KFC and the shop and all that stuff, and proper get amongst the good stuff. And then you've flown out to your PB, and you know you sort of think you're going to have like a sort of settling in period, and there'll be. I don't know what you think, and it sounds stupid saying that, but it's just like, right, like, you literally step off the helo, right, you're on Sanger, you're there, you cut the strand, and you're like, fucking hell, you're sort of straight into it, and you're like, God, this is, you know, that's it now, we're on exercise, and it's not even semi-non-tack, is it?
Semi-non-tack.
Yeah, semi-non-jack. And then the first op that we went on in like week one, the first company op, and it's hot, you know, in summer it's like 40-50 degrees, and you're out there like patrolling for sort of 8 hours, whatever it is, with your kit, and it's hot and you're hanging out, and we took a knee next to this compound, and the Afghans use murder holes, don't they, when they put a little hole in the mud and they like spy through, and we sort of took a knee there to have some water, and the point man said he saw someone poke the head out, and he was going to go and follow them in because he sort of looked and then peeked back in, and we're like, no, don't, because they do come-ons, don't they? They get you to come in, lay a tripwire, and then something goes boom, and then all of a sudden, boom, and I was like, the fuck's happened there? And I was disorientated and everything like that, and then looked down, and my trousers were gone, and it was just covered in blood from my quad, shin bone, my side of my leg, my arm, my arse, and my neck, and just like fucking fragged up from a grenade. And you're like, the fuck's happened? And then everyone's staring at you, you know, with eyes like that going, don't panic. And you're like shit.
Like deer in a headlight.
I really want to panic now. So sort of like picked up my sharpshooter because that had flown over there, and I had to fucking grab that and got sort of loads of FFDs put on. And then, you know, had to hobble our way out, and the Afghans have wadis, you know, like them fucking streams, like dirty streams that are full of like muddy water, but the Afghans use them as toilets and just shit and piss in them, don't they? And they were like, you need to jump over this, because if your leg goes in that, then your leg will come off, you know, because
you're getting sepsis.
Yeah, 100% at best, you know. And So I was like, right, like sort of ran and jumped with my Daystacon rifle, and I didn't think. I landed on one leg, which was the one with the bit in the shin bone, and I felt it go into my shin bone, and it was like almost like sort of passed out with the pain. It's like a white hot pain. Imagine like a dead arm, a dead leg, but a dead bone, you know, and it was just in deep. Managed to get back to the road, and the sergeant major picked us up on his quad and threw us in the bin at the back, and just went, if anyone knows, Dunks Campbell from 4-5, he had a very Scottish accent, you know, like, you drink Oxford, you know, like, alright, so, got taken back to the PB, morphined up, and then got Kazzy back to Bastion, so.
Fucking hell. Welcome to Afghan.
Welcome to Afghan, week one. They actually said that it wasn't the first casualty of Herrick 14, because it was during the handover period, so it was the last casualty of Herrick 13, technically. So it was like, very early doors, it didn't even count.
Statistics matter, right?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. So, after getting what can only be described as the greatest Afghan welcome, you, did you spend any time in Headley Court, or was it sort of pretty much, did you have to do any physio recovery, was it pretty much out of the hospital when you were good to go, or?
So I got taken back to a American hospital first, and so on the helo flying back there, this like, because it was a Pedro that picked me up rather than Mert, so it's like the Yanks, and they're quite full on, aren't they?
Yeah, very American.
Yeah. And he tried to put a line in me, you know, to put fluid in and all of that. And I felt a pop and a blood, and it's just fucking blood going everywhere. And he's like, man, put pressure on it. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to fucking die. You know, trying to do that on a helo that's like lifting off. I can only imagine it's not easy, you know what I mean? So, fair play. Got back to this place, to this Yank sort of hospital. I'll be honest, I can't remember what the fuck it was called.
I think you had other things on your mind, mate. It's forgiven.
Yeah, I wasn't looking at the welcome sign. And I got scanned, and I was lying in this bed waiting, still in my rigged like type thing, and they were like, so man, we got some good news and some bad news, like, it's not serious, you can walk and all that, and you know, blah blah blah. I was like, alright, great. And they went, but there is a piece of frag in one of your testicles, and we're going to have to cut it off. I was like, excuse me? I was like, I don't think there is, it feels fine. He went, no, look, we can see the scan here, we can see it, we're going to have to cut it off. And all I'm thinking is, I'm going to be an 18-year-old Cyclops, and I'm not. I'm never going to have kids, and what the fuck's going to happen? And I was like, can I check? Because, you know, and they got about five or six, like, different doctors in, all seem to be girls, to check my ball. And, you know, under that pressure, it sort of wasn't the most flattering look anyway. I went down to the shock. And no one could find it, and I was like, maybe I should check, you know, being that they belong to me. And I had a check. I couldn't feel anything. And they were like, sir, were you scanned with your blast pants on? And I was like, yeah, I was. And I'd never worn them once to that day. And on the way out, someone was like, you should wear them, you know. And I wore them that one day, and it saved my bollocks. So
fucking hell. Where you risk your dandies, boys.
Yeah. And then back to Bastion Hospital for a month. I had four operations. Was on a morphine drip, which was quite a decent week of my life. What I can remember of it anyway.
Best week ever.
You can click it after 90 seconds. You get like 90 seconds and it'll click again. And, you know, if you're in pain, you're to click it. But I was that bored. I was just watching the clock and going like, 88, 89, 90. Oh, fuck. And then after a month, I was back out sort of thing. And then,
but just happens to be a heroin addict.
Yeah. Oh, I was sweating a lot. I was back out. Unfortunately, I contracted an Afghan flesh-eating disease through my wounds and all of this. So I ended up getting Kazzy back again and having to go back home that time. That was after about 4 or 5 months of being there, about 5 months. So I went home early. So, yeah, that was Afghan pretty much wrapped up.
I mean, fucking hell, there's not much more you need to say, is there? Fucking hell. Right.
Really? No.
Jesus. So, Afghan was interesting then. And then when you finished Afghan, you got back, I'm guessing you finished a bit of recovery and things like that. You say, did you sort of start getting into the rugby from then? Did you play a bit of rugby before the core? How did the rugby side of it come around?
So when I got home, I had about 3 or 4 months off total, and I was just going out and just self-destructive pattern and just doing the
rugby.
Yeah, right. And I'd played rugby since I was like 7. At my local rugby club, Erin Altrincham, and me and my dad actually hold a record at the rugby club, being the only father-son combo to get sent off together. So we played together in a men's game, and someone lifted my dad's leg up, and he was punching the bloke off, and the bloke punched my dad. So I ran over from the far wing at 17 years old, and every bit of weight I had in me, which wasn't much, and I swung and I hit this bloke with everything that I had, and it was like a fly had just touched him, and he just grabbed me and absolutely leathered me. So all three of us got sent off, and me and my dad were stood under the post together type thing there, and we had a beer after. It was all good. But I played from a young age, and then managed to get into the core side. Well, I played for 4-5, and then managed to get onto the core side after playing rugby in Gibraltar on ship. So I was on ship, and we sort of made little like ship teams on this thing, and a few lads from the core team were there, and then played for the core, and ended up playing for sort of quite a few years. The core sevens, the core union league, and the Navy under 23s. So played a bit, did a couple of trips and all of that, which probably the best trips you are going to get, because you are a civvy all by the badge that you're wearing, and going to Australia, playing rugby, going out, seeing Sydney, and it's not bad.
There's just rugby tour, like, provided for by passes, isn't it?
Yeah, and because it was technically an exercise, like Exercise Australian Dagger, we actually got LSA for it as well.
What a joke.
So it was good, yeah. The rugby side of it was good. And I got back from Afghan. I was in the ping zone, and I was downgraded for like a year anyway because of everything. I got pinged to SIGS, and I went to go and see my Sergeant Major, and I sort of marched it. I actually thought that it was a bite. Because I thought it was a joke, and I sort of marched in, and I was like, "Sir, I've been pinged for SIGs." And he was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Come on, sir." Oh, right. Okay, I'll see what I can do. And then he was like, "Your stores." I was like, "Right, sounds safe." I'd gone from being a long-range rifleman in Afghan to stores because I was downgraded, and wasn't what I wanted to be doing, and it, you know, really fucking drains the life out of you type thing. But the only good thing was I could get away playing sport a lot, and that kept me going, like, because I was smashing the fizz. I was always banging into my fizz and all of that, and I could get away playing rugby, which was like the escape from the work side of it, so, which was good. And that sort of keeps you happy and all of that. The rugby lads a class crack as well, which is good.
Yeah, I bet, mate. I bet. So, once you sort of, did you leave and then go straight out to Australia? Was there a bit of seeing off before you decided you were going to put your chit in? How did the sort of exiting happen, and then how did you end up in Australia?
So when I got back from Afghan, I actually went to Australia for a month by myself just to go and travel it and everything like that. And I was always like, oh, fucking hell, this is what it's about. They just have it so right out there, you know, like down by the beach, beers, the kids, you know, like if you were going to bring up kids from like 5 years old, they're surfing, they're doing ocean rescue with like press up circuits and beach rugby. And you know, you're like, fucking hell, you would never get people out here doing that. I always wanted to go. And after my final rugby tour to Oz with the core rugby team, where, we got absolutely battered 3 games straight. I didn't know you could be that good at rugby. It was horrendous. I think we sort of thought it was a bit of a stag do tour piss up thing. And we got put against some sort of ex-Aussie greats and all of that. And it was just absolutely horrendous. But that just made me go, I really want to move out here. You know, like I sort of really do. And I put my notice in to leave, And I was like, I want to get out to Sydney. Ended up moving out there on a working holiday visa type thing, and playing rugby at Waverley in Bondi Beach. And I was there for like a year and a half, just shy of 2 years, living the dream and everything there. And I didn't want to come back. I could have stayed forever. I went over there to meet an Aussie Sheila. That was the idea. Find an Aussie missus. Get a passport and never have to come home. And I've come home with an English bird anyway, so my fiance's English. She knows that too, so that's all right.
Yeah, I was going to say, if she ever listens to this, I'm glad she already knows.
The plan went off piece, so yeah. All worked out.
Perfect, mate. So you got back, you all settled. When did the idea for Civvy to Commando sort of start taking root, and when did it sort of become a thing, really?
So, being honest, it'll sort of sound a bit off-piece here. Like, after Afghan, I sort of suffered with anxiety, depression, and PTSD, and I was struggling with it for ages, like on and off, antidepressants and like therapy and all of this, and ended up in a sort of real bad spot. And that was another sort of reason for me leaving. I wanted to go away and do something that would make me fucking happy. You know, I thought moving to Oz isn't probably the worst thing you could do. And I sort of came back, and I've been thinking about, I've always wanted to have my own business. I've been thinking about it for a long, long time. And, you know, you listen to all the sort of business podcasts and the audio books and everything, and it's like, you know, trying to get some inspiration, and it's like, what, try and do something you don't have to learn from scratch. Try and do something that you already have tools to do, which no one else has. And
fuck, I was like, now, I wish someone told me that before I started GTC. Jesus. I picked something that I've got zero skills or experience in, and then just went, yeah, this seems like a crack.
Mate, no end like the deep end, though. And you're clearly learning to swim with your background.
Exactly, yeah. For people that can't see, I've got one of those, like, embossed, like, screen things of, like, I'm under the sea somehow. I don't know how I put it on, and I can't turn it off. Sorry, mate. Sorry, interrupt.
Merman. Merman.
What a film. Sorry to interrupt you. Yeah, so you were went over to Australia to try and get away from that sort of, get some positivity in your life and help that mentality.
And yeah, so I was thinking about setting something up that I had relevant skills for, and I was like, not a lot of people in the UK have been Marines, you know, like really in terms of the grand scheme of like how many people, and that's quite a niche skill to have. And I was like, right, so I like that. I like my fizz, you know, so, sort of ultramarathons, rugby and things like that. I like my weight, my strength, and I like talking to people, and that's something that I've never been able to do. And I was like, I'd actually love to get into, like, sort of doing the podcast now. I'd love to do podcasts, and I'd love to get into public speaking. And I think to go from stuttering, not being able to say my name in the register, standing up at school to have to read something out and look like a fucking duck that's fucking got brain damage or something, fucking kind of quack, to be able to stand up and speak is what I'd love to do. So I thought I could make something throughout that. I'd love, because I found myself when people were asking me about joining up, I wouldn't just send the odd message to them. I'd send about 100 messages, and I'd be voice noting them and ringing them and being like, do this. And I thought, I'm passionate about this. I really like doing it. And I wanted to, when someone passes, you're like, fucking hell, you know, I had a small part in that. And
yeah, you get a bit of a buzz, don't you? I can imagine. It's like that sort of immediate feedback of, like, what I've done to help this person has helped them achieve, like, a big life goal.
100%. And I remember how much I wanted that person, and that person wasn't there. You know, God, I sound like fucking Austin Powers or something. Daddy wasn't there.
To take me to the fair.
She's been there. But, so I thought, there's something there, and I want to be able to help sort of people, and not many blokes are open about their sort of mental, like, problems and all of that. And I got to a spot where I was completely open about it. I told the first person, and then it was sort of like snowballed. And I told so many people, because every time that you sort of tell one person, it really helps. And I was like, I'm so open with it now that rather than portray yourself as this big, hard Marine and blah, 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 you know, which everyone thinks, I could never be like that. I wanted to be like, look, I've struggled. I was scared about this. I was anxious about this. I was, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's normal. It's natural. And be able to empathise with people rather than just fling a training programme at them and be like, fucking crack that and pass training. I wanted to be able to actually level with people, be on their level, and help them to, with all of the experiences I've sort of dealt with from life, adversity, struggling, mental health, sort of getting over a stutter and all of that, and like constant nerves and anxiety, to pass those experiences on, and also all of the fuck-ups that I made in training, which there was thousands of, so they don't make the same ones. You know, I can teach them prior to going.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that does separate from what I see Civvy to Commando with other, say, prep companies or coaching companies, is you don't advertise yourself as a coaching or a PT company. You know, obviously there is that aspect to it, and that is the fundamental sort of basis of most of the things you do, and it has to be because that's what the core is. But you know, you specialize, if you like, and you prefer to do the what you call like the one-to-one mentoring. So yeah. It's, you know, you're mentoring people through using the channel of Fizz. And I guess that's the good thing that I want to highlight about C2C is that, one, it's brilliant branding, because when you say C2C, it sounds like CTC.
Yeah.
So very clever. It also gives you that sort of, it's not just here's your Fizz. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure, especially as you grow, there'll be that certain aspects and levels of, depending on how much time and effort and money people have to pay in for their prep, there'll be less generic options. There's got to be, otherwise you can never grow. Or more generic options, should I say. But I think what you specialise in and what you like to do, and I noticed you are very strict with yourselves to say, look, we're cutting it there in terms of we can't take any more people on because that's our capacity, which I think is incredible. Because you're honest with it and you just say, look, this is what we can output. If you can fit into those amount of people, brilliant. If you can't, get on the next month's one or the couple of months down the line or whatever. So I think that's something that's worth highlighting, is that mental side that you push really well, which is awesome.
Yeah, 100%. And sort of with that like, I won't lie, when like we got swamped with people asking for us, and I was at the point of, I want to take everyone on, obviously. And I was like, I can't do this. This is too much. Like, you know, I was having to say to people, can I speak to you during the week? And I was like, my entire life was gone. And I was like, my missus, you know, I couldn't speak to my missus. I couldn't do anything that I wanted to do. And also sort of, I'm advertising how to get fit, like, physically too. But I was that busy. I couldn't train. And, you know, I was getting up at the crack of dawn. I was staying up till 1 a.m. doing work. And I was like, I've got no time for me. And I was like, this isn't right. It'd be better if we had a set number and then we just push it into intakes. Could I have people at week one, week two, week three, week nine, week this, week that, can I pause? And all of this. And it was just too messy. And I thought, a monthly intake. And then if not, you can just catch the next one. You can just catch the next one, and it'll fall into place a lot nicer than having people all over the place. But that's all about learning, isn't it? I suppose you don't make mistakes, you don't learn. So,
no, exactly. It's about growing that business and figuring those things out and carrying it through. I mean, I can imagine that sort of leads quite nicely to sort of our next sort of focus, and that's the mental side of it. And you were saying, obviously, you were starting to struggle and you were starting to have not enough time for yourself, and that would have, you know, eventually started to take a toll on your mental health. But from what you've been saying, you're pretty open with your mental health and your struggles, which people need to be nowadays, you know, and you seem to be very, emotionally aware, if you like, or,
yeah,
you know, which is really good. So would you mind like just giving us a quick sort of brief thing of like what you went through mentally, and sort of how you sort of found out, or how you got to the position where you are now, which is like very emotionally healthy and emotionally sort of sensitive and knowing yourself in that way.
Yeah. I like the way that you use emotionally aware, mentally aware. That was quite a good thing, because some people are really ignorant to it all and they don't understand. And as I didn't, when I was 18 and I got back from Afghan, if someone had said like depression back then, I'd think about someone sat on their sofa with the fucking dressing gown on, just crying into, you know, when you see Ron Burgundy and he's crying into his glass of wine, like you know, like that. And I thought, but I'm not, I'm happy.
I'm a glass case of emotion.
Exactly that, yeah. And I was like, I'm not in a glass case of emotion. I'm like, I'm happy. I like going out partying and all of that. So I didn't get it. I wasn't emotionally or mentally mature enough to understand or to deal with what that was and what came with it. So being like a young Marine, like fresh back from Afghan with a quartet and all this, I wanted to just go and do what I thought bootleg should do and go out and piss up and have a fight and all of this, and snowballed. And I was fighting every week and I was going out and just fighting. So I had all this anger built up. I said it previously, and with Afghan, because it felt like you'd been led up to this fight, like, imagine a sort of a cage fighter or a boxer has trained for this fight, trained for it, and you're ready to go. And it's not just a normal fight, it's Rocky against Ivan Drago in, like, Rocky IV. It's like USA against Russia, the enemy, you know, and all of this stuff. And on the way into the ring, you get blindsided, and then you get took away, and then the fight's off, and you're like, what the fuck, I've got all this built-up anger and training and everything with, like, nowhere to go. And anyone that's flown home on a medical flight, the people who are probably most mentally unstable, don't stop off for the decompression. So you don't get that. You go straight home and are just told crack on, which I get, because you've got to get back to like medical stuff. They can't just fly you to Ayanapa for like long weekends on the way home when you're fucking hanging out. Which,
yeah, rolling around in a wheelchair in the clubs in Ayanapa.
I mean, it would have been good, but at the same time, you know, it's probably not the best idea. So I don't hold that against them, but at the same time, there should have been a support network back at home. But when I got, I finally sort of like broke down at camp, and my boss saw me. I was like crying, and I was crying constantly at home and on weekends and all of that and stuff like this. I obviously didn't tell friends, because I was like embarrassed. I was like, what the fuck's wrong with me? And he like marched me to sick bay, opened the door, doc, woof, door shut. Fucking get that sorted, like, type thing, which I wouldn't have done, so him giving me that push was, like, the best thing.
Yeah.
And sort of spoke about it all, and then I was, like, shy to speak about it, but when it started coming out, it all just poured out. And then you're like, oh, thank God, thank fucking God, like, I'm so glad that I've said all of that stuff. And he's like, look, from a non-Marine point of view, you've been through this, you've been through that, this has happened. That is a completely normal thing to feel like that about, obviously. Like, and what people don't get with mental health is they think this thing about it being weak, like, you're not choosing for it to happen. It just happens. It's not like you go, I'm choosing to be really, really sad, and your brain does it. You can't control your fucking brain. You know, like, it just does it for you. So around that time, I started taking antidepressants, and I was sort of still in that age of just going out drinking and partying and smashing stuff up and all of that. So it didn't work, and I stopped taking them because it hurt, the pain, like the stomach and all of that. They're like side effects, and it was fucking horrendous. And I was like, I'm not doing this. You have to, like, what I didn't know then, you have to sort of push past that 2 weeks of it being a honking, and then your body gets used to it, and then it really does help, because I've taken them for years now and still do. And it helps. But I'd say back then I wasn't ready for it, so I wasn't ready to accept what it was or to learn about it. And then when I finally was a bit more mature and I wanted to learn about it, I think the thing that helped the most was learning what it was, what anxiety. I'd never actually heard the word anxiety until I got told that's what I had a severe form of. I was like, I don't know what that fucking means. I've actually not heard that word before. And it's just the constant worry, the constant fear, the constant, like, nerves of like something bad's going to happen, something's happening, oh God, what's this, why are they, you know, and constantly worried about the next thing, and to the point where you can't sleep, where you can't breathe, you're having panic attacks and your chest fucking so tight, feels like someone's sat on it. And I think moving to Australia helped so much, because it's a place where, you know, here people are very judgy, aren't they? And I think in the forces too, people are very you do get a bit of it, sort of like people judge a character, judge a book by its cover. And over here, you know, you have to dress a certain way and you have to feel like you're, you know, because there's expectations of everyone. But there, you just walk to the beach and you're fucking barefoot and no one cares. Everyone's just happy because it's sunny and having a beer. And it's like, I needed that, you know, that sort of release. And then came home and I thought, I'm pretty much in the happiest spot that I've ever been in. I was fully squared away. I was like, I'm happy, I'm really, really good, and all of that bad stuff was sort of put to bed. And then a good friend that I'd made at Waverley Rugby Club called Scott Sarson, who was a para, which was, like, funny we should get on, but we really, really got on. We had a lot of sort of deep conversations when we were pissed, because he had some really bad tours of Afghan, and he told me things that he said he hadn't told people, like previously, about his struggles. And I was like, if I'm ever bad, I'll call you. If you're ever bad, you call me. And we had that. And then when I moved home, he took his own life. Not because I'd moved home, but like...
That bad of a mate?
No, sorry, yeah. That came out wrong, didn't it? No, because he was having problems and all of that. And it derailed me, because all of these things that I'd buried that I thought were gone just instantly came back to the front. And I felt guilty and all of that, and it all came back. And then I found it happening. Again, I was, like, crying driving to work. I was crying when I was driving, and I was like, I could just veer this car off now and just smash it up, and that'd be it. And it happened a couple of times. I was feeling like that about doing it, and I was boozed up constantly and just being fucking stupid, doing really bad stuff, and I was like, this isn't healthy. My missus made me speak to someone, and I was like, how the fuck can speaking to someone that I don't know help? And I don't know what it is. It's like... what's it called? The Bermuda Triangle or something like that. It just helps. It just works. You just speak to this person 10 times. And by the end, like, it's hard because you have to speak about things you don't want to speak about. And it was like a magic trick. I felt fucking amazing after it. And I felt like I'd confronted it all. And then for Scott, we decided to run a 43 mile ultramarathon to raise money for Rock to Recovery. And if I had just kept on boozing the way that I was and doing the stuff that I was, I probably would have ended up killing myself. And having that target of, shit, I've got to get fit because I've signed up to this now, and fucking hell, I can't be the one Marine doing it and be the one hanging out. You know, like, I was like, shit, I've got so much pressure to get fit. So I was like, I have to go and train. And I wanted to, because my why was the reason I was so upset.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like training to, I don't know, do like a fucking park run or something. I was like, this means so much to me. And because there was so much going on in Australia with the funeral and I was stuck here, I felt helpless and I wanted to help. And to me, that was helping. So after that run, it was like, I put that to bed now. That's the best thing I could have done. Like, I feel like it's off my shoulders now. I've done my bit.
Yeah, I think it's one of those massively sad realities of men's mental health, not just veteran mental health, but I think as we get better with it, as people like yourself are talking about it and things like that, and unfortunately, as like blokes like Scott continue to take their own lives, it's still a massive issue. And we are improving, we are getting better, but I think, you know, essentially, like, Scott will never know that he saved your life.
Yeah.
And by the sound of it, he did. You know, because that seems like the turning point in your life when you'd struggle with mental health all the way through and on and off again, on and off again. But that sounds like when Scott passed, that was the time where you actually went, well, okay, hold on a minute, let's nip this in the bud, let's start doing something about it. And now you've created a positive, as positive as you can out of such a tragic situation. So it's again even more sad that Scott will never know, in this world anyway, you know, that he's saved at least one person's life. But then the fact that you went out and you run the ultra marathon, which, you know, marathons are hard, but then you just make them harder by doing them for longer. It raises that awareness. And by the fact that we can talk about it now on the podcast, it helps to share that message. And, you know, Scott's memory and, just using his name now will help to go on and help improve so many people. So yeah, it's a mega difficult one, and it's something that a lot of people struggle with. Like some of the guys in the inner circle, GTC, have got a good relationship with Rock to Recovery. We've used them before. And like they're on our list to, as we've got some internal sort of, targets that we're hitting. As we hit certain ones, we're donating, amounts of money to charity, and they're on the list of one of the quite high ones essentially, because we want it to be a decent donation to give back. So yeah, so it's a mega issue, mate. And, I appreciate you sharing all that, because it's a really hard one to talk about even with yourself, you know, someone that is so emotionally aware and that has dealt with it and essentially is on the right side of it now. I pretty much think I know the answer, but if there's people out there that are struggling, they're either serving, they're not serving, and they have doubts, they have things, you know, from someone that's on the right side of it now that probably still struggles, but again, is fighting the right side of the fight, what would you like to sort of say to them?
Flick anyone a message, just a mate. It, like, I found myself not even speaking to my best friends over it. I'd be out pissed off with someone that I would never have fucking thought I'd have told, and I'd pour my whole heart out to them. And I think it's because you don't feel scared of the judgment. You're like, I can just tell this person because it doesn't matter. And when you do, I don't want to be the only bloke on camp like this. And he said, I've spoke to hundreds. And then the weight was off my shoulders. There's so many more people out there that feel like it. So just fucking speak to people, because more people have it than you know. Send me a message. I'll message you back and I'll talk to you. I went to the NHS to speak to my doctor, and because I was a veteran, I got bumped up the waiting list. It's supposed to take months, and I was speaking to someone on a talking therapy within days. So they are getting better with it, like you said. They are aware of the problem. But you will never regret telling someone, and I've never regretted a single person that I've told. I've never told someone and they've gone, that's fucking blah, blah. Everyone, no matter how emotionally unaware they are, has just been absolutely amazing and so receptive and been so sort of supportive. And people that I would have never thought send a message, are you all right, mate, blah, 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 and it's fucking great. And yeah, just speak to people. You'll never regret telling someone, genuinely.
Yeah, I think, especially in the modern day and age, it's becoming better and better. People are talking about it more and more, which seems like the answer. But I think that the biggest takeaway is, like, people, if they're worth speaking to and if they're good enough people, they will know the difference between the good old fashioned, you know, stoicism. Because sometimes, especially from our backgrounds, you know, sometimes you don't have time and it's unsafe for you to be emotionally aware in that time.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes if something's going on, and my everyday job in the fire service, you know, if something happens and you see something that you're like, all right, that's getting to me, you have to shelf that. You can't deal with it there and then. And that certain amount of, like, British stoicism, or however you want to put it, is incredibly important in those moments. You know, you need to be able to just get over it, crack on, and deal with what's in front of you. Agreed. There's no one that I can deny that to. However, stoicism and not talking about something is far easier than then coming back after the incident, or a few years, few months later, a couple of weeks later, or there's no incident, it's just an issue, and texting someone, especially if they're close to you, and saying, mate, you've got 10 minutes for a phone call. Just want to get something off my chest. You know, hiding it and not saying anything is so much easier than that. So don't let the fact that you want to be a stoic, as is one of the trends now, to stop you chatting to people. Because anyone worth their sort of worth chatting to, essentially, will know the difference between you're following a stoic lifestyle and you're bottling stuff up. There is a difference there. So
100%. A lot of people do the whole, they can see their mate going the wrong way, and they send them text, are you all right, mate? Yeah, I'm sound. And that's box ticked. It don't work like that. They're not going to reply, no, mate, I'm blah, 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 blah. It doesn't work like that. So get them out for a drink, have a couple of drinks, and then be like, right, come on, like, what's the crack? And it'll pour out. But you're not box ticked by just saying, are you all right? If you can see someone, you'll know yourself. And a lot of lads, especially around the core, and I've done it myself too, go, God, he's snagged up and he, and just leave it. You can't just leave it. You know, in the modern day now, fucking just go and have a chat, pull into one time and be like, come on, what's the crack? It's not weak, it's actually braver, I'd say, to just get it off your chest and to speak to someone.
Yeah, I think it's a tough issue and we've just got to keep discussing it. You know, we've got to keep discussing it. If you've got the issues or even just talking about previous issues, just to normalise it, you know, so that people listening to this realise that, you know, any mental issue is just another injury. You know, we don't decide who rolls an ankle. We don't decide whose bicep pops on a deadlift, you know, and people are very, all right, the core can sometimes be like, well, you know, Medbay warrior and stuff, and that's a certain amount of just trying to get you to have that attitude of pushing through. But if you've got a genuine injury, the core looks after you, and it's sort of, people have realised that now, that you don't decide whether you break a bone and you don't decide whether you pick up an injury, and that's the exact same with mental health. You don't decide whether a situation affects you negatively. You don't decide whether you're sad about something. That all comes down to what's going on. And as soon as we can get the message out to enough people that they turn around and go, yeah, all right, I'm going through a little bit now. I've got a few snags. I'm going to have a chat with someone. Doesn't have to be a healthcare professional. Could just be an oppo. Could just be a mate. Could be just, you know, jumping on a podcast, whatever it is. I think it's just about normalising it, isn't it?
100%. I couldn't agree more. And I think that's all it is. Just speak to someone. It's free. It's not. Like, the first time's hard, but it's easy to speak to a mate, isn't it?
Yeah, and it gets easier and gets easier. So, I mean, the mental side of it, we'll bring it back to more of a positive note now and crack back on with Civvy to Commando so that people can really get a good grip of what you can offer them. So the mental side of it is something that you sort of stress in Civvy to Commando. So you're essentially a preparation company that that helps people get ready for the commando course or the Marines. What would you say, if you could describe it to anyone, so someone said, you know, well, okay, I've been listening to the podcast, I like, you sound handsome, DC, and I want to come and give you some money. What would you, how do you operate? What sort of things do you do? How can you help someone?
So right now we're doing everything manually. So if you find us on Instagram or Facebook, but mainly Instagram, we operate through, send us a message and we can put a sort of plan together based on how long you've got until your CPC, until training, and operate like that. Every week we send you a sort of fresh pack and it'll have all of your phys in it, your military knowledge, insight into training based on my mental state sort of going through training. I was worried about this bit, blah, 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 but it turned out that it wasn't that bad. I was making myself more scared of it. All this sort of stuff, sort of true honest takes on it. All of your fitness there, which is progressive over the whole program and very sort of marine specific. Along with that, we're sort of teaching your military knowledge to get you into good practices prior to going. So rather than the first time that you get bollocked for your water bottle being like not toppers, it's by your training team, it's by us, and your training team's not seen that, and you look hoofing when you go down there, you look better than everyone else, you know things that you couldn't have known without someone teaching you. As well as that, at the end of every week, we have a one-to-one debrief when you speak to us one-on-one. Any questions that you have about the core, about training, about the CPC, about ROT, anything like that, ask us. And we also give you a commando mindset challenge for the week to either carry out or to present back to us. So like by the end of the course, you will have demonstrated all of the commando ethos, values and spirit. And by the end of the 12 weeks, we can say to you, honestly, from a bootneck, you do have what it takes. And that's the general idea. So, we've had all positive feedback so far. Everyone seems to be loving it a lot. A lot more people are staying on, which I didn't account for. I thought people would do the 12 weeks and then leave. But some people have signed up that haven't even applied yet, and they've got ages, and I really want to see people through. So we're keeping people on, and we're still catching up with everyone. We're looking to bring in some more instructors soon, some more staff, because we want to grow it, and the way that it's been so far has been so good, and I think there's so many ways we can go with it, and to keep our niche of the one-to-one, the sort of personal touch of it, is what we want to really sort of specify at. We don't want to substitute that. That's the part that we like doing and we want to keep doing.
Yeah, that makes sense, mate. It seems like it's one of those sort of companies that, I mean, even on Instagram for the past couple of months, it's just like people quite clearly like it. You know, it's just been growing and growing and growing, and you got to 4K quicker than us and we're not happy about it. But I say that we were like mega buzz for you. Like we shared it as much as we could. So yeah, it's great, mate. It's quite clear that people, want that and need that. You know, it's not easy, and I think there's also loads of growth in there as well. You know, you've got the whole commando side of it, so you know, it's not just Marines. You can link in Army commandos that are already serving, and you can help them through it. So if you can get, it all depends on recruiting, doesn't it? You know, if you can get an Army commando in on board, then you can, you know, really specialize in that. If you wanted to go to the dark side and get some reg lads in, you know, there's so much there that you can go through. And I think with that mindset of not wanting to compromise, which has got to be something from the core, because we're all legends like that. I think that's the key thing that sets you apart, isn't it?
Yeah, 100% that. And there's a lot of avenues where it can go. Fucking hell, I'm stuttering now. Too much coffee, probably. but I enjoy it, like, genuinely. Like, it's not a box ticket exercise. It's not a job when you're like, oh, I'm just going to work. Like, speaking to people, I could literally, if you've probably noticed, I could speak to them all day. I get really, like, and I speak to these lads that are 16 who are like, I really want this, but I just don't think that it's possible. And I'm like, I passed at 16. Like, of course you can. I've had some people that came on, and when they were speaking to me at like week one, they were scared to voice note, they were scared to ring, they were scared to this, they were too nervous. And by the end now, they're like, right, fucking hell, I've done this, done that, and they're so much more confident. And I prefer seeing that than the press-ups has got better, because seeing someone come on as a person, like, is a massive thing. Anyone can do more press-ups, but not many people can, like, actually come on as a person. And helping people too, like we've had some people who have had sort of family issues and all of that, and said, "Oh, I'm going to have to sort of drop out and everything like that," because I've had a loss in the family. And I said, "Mate, just stay on for the whole thing. It's on us. I want to coach you." And like to see, you know, these people have like rang up, like, thank you so much. And I actually just like speaking to them, like fucking genuinely. I could just speak to them and offer, like. I think once you've had mental shit, like sort of mental problems, and people have been there for you, this sounds cheesy, but like you want to be there for other people. Like if someone is having a problem like that, I'm not going to say, okay, sort of see you later. I'm going to say, mate, stay on and you can talk to me. If you need someone to speak to who you don't know, so it's a bit more judgment free, I'll always do that. I like being a bit of a support network too, rather than just PT. I'd like to be. If people were in training that had left me, and they were in like basic training and they got to week 20, they were having a shit day, you know, flick us a message and we can have a chat and sort of get you back on track. Cause everyone has those days in training. It's normal.
Yeah, definitely, mate. I think it's one of those things that, you know, if you can keep that attitude and keep it going, people are just going to flock to it, and it's just going to grow and grow and grow. And by the sound of it, already you're reaching that point where you're struggling to give, you know, when you've just changed it, so you're not struggling anymore, which is amazing, you know, and you're adapting as you would expect to do. So where can people find you then? I think we could both natter on until the end of time, but the problem is people don't want to listen to us. So, maybe we'll stay on after air and just keep chatting for another 6 hours.
Yeah, go on then.
Forget the fact that I've got about 4 hours of work left to do.
I'll let the dog out, but then I'm all right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So where can people get hold of you then? Like, what's the socials? What's the email addresses? You know, if people just want to find out more information or they want to sign up and get involved, where can people get in touch?
Yeah, cheers, mate. So on Instagram, it's Civvy, so Civvy, number 2, Commando, Civi 2 Commando. We've had actually one weirdo who's made a fake account, and it's definitely not that one.
Wow. That's how you know you've made it, mate.
Fucking can't believe it. So I think that's been shut down. Same on Facebook, Civi 2 Commando, and the website's due to be launched today or tomorrow, so that'll be up soon, and then we can look a bit more all singing, all dancing. It's hard juggling all the plates at once, trying to get everything going, as I'm sure you know. And yeah, flick us a message. We're operating on a sort of waiting list basis now, so the next intake would be July. We've actually had people sign up for July, and I've had people sign up for August, so we're already getting ahead, which is good. If you want any more info, just flick us a message and we can get back to you ASAP. We normally do reply quite quickly.
Laz, mate, thank you very much. Yeah, we'll make sure we put all of the, because by the time this goes out, the website should be live, so we'll make sure we put that in any descriptions and links to all the social medias when we put it out on all of the platforms, if it allows us to. So DC, I think we've covered enough there. We've got some incredible insights into Simps Commando, into you, into mental health. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, mate. I really appreciate it. I said, like, just doing these is helping a lot, the sort of confidence of speaking and like things like that. It helps more than you know, even though I'm fucking stuttering now. Right, that's it, get me off.
Yeah, that's it. Time out. You got an hour in you and then it all fucks up. Right, cheers DC. Thank you very much. Absolute pleasure. And we'll make sure to get you on down the line to get an update as well.
100%, mate.
Thank you. Cheers, mate. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the GTC podcast. Remember, do something that makes you just a little bit better every single day. Don't forget to head over to our Instagram @GTC podcast. Thanks again. Stay wavy.